Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Higher mortgage rates and a drop in sales put new pressure on the housing market. And why pension funds are pulling hundreds of billions of dollars out of stocks.
Pension funds have had a great run in the stock market, like a lot of people. Stocks have had a great year this year, so it's a good moment to take money off the table if you've been riding those gains.
Plus, more than a dozen states fight healthcare acquisitions backed by private equity. It's Thursday, April 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Let's start with some updates in the U.S. housing market. Mortgage rates have once again topped 7%. Mortgage finance giant Freddie Mac said the average rate on the standard 30-year fixed mortgage jumped nearly a quarter percentage point to 7.1%. Meanwhile, home sales are falling. The National Association of Realtors said existing home sales fell 4.3% in March from February, the largest percentage decline on a monthly basis in more than a year. Housing reporter Nicole Friedman said that's all putting new pressure on the housing market.
Definitely, there was some momentum in the housing market at the start of the year in January and February because rates had come down a bit and buyers were kind of jumping back into the market. And that momentum has been halted because mortgage rates have been climbing higher again, back to 7%. And so we've really seen that that has kind of pushed some buyers back to the sidelines. People are just feeling the uncertainty right now around where mortgage rates are headed. Also, with the recent National Association of Realtors settlement, there will be changes coming later this year to how buyers and sellers pay their real estate agents. And so that's also just injected more uncertainty into the market. So some buyers and some sellers are just sitting on the sidelines here, kind of waiting for some of this uncertainty to be resolved, waiting to see where mortgage rates head next.
As a reminder, that groundbreaking settlement Nicole mentioned was reached last month and settles claims the industry conspired to keep agent commissions high. It's expected to bring the biggest changes to how Americans buy and sell homes in decades. That could prompt some shoppers and sellers to wait for more clarity when the rules go into effect in July. Last month, we talked about how private equity firms are focusing their attention beyond corporate America to U.S. consumers by pushing into asset-based finance, like auto loans, credit cards, and real estate mortgages. They're also getting into healthcare, but now more than a dozen states are pushing back against private equity-backed consolidation of medical businesses. And studies show that consolidation is happening quickly. The Physicians Advocacy Institute, a trade group for doctors, says corporations now own nearly a third of physician practices after more than 44,000 were merged from 2019 to 2024. Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal Pro private equity reporter Chris Cumming. So Chris, let's start with the major concerns states have about these private equity-backed acquisitions.
When I spoke with state legislators, almost all of them mentioned a specific example of a large corporation or of a private equity firm that had been buying, acquiring, and in many cases, shutting down services or raising prices. It was all it's a very intensely local experience that they were bringing up. Of course, everyone has read studies showing what happens with private equity acquisitions in the medical sector. There's conflicting studies, but there's been quite a bit of evidence that it reduces quality of care at hospitals and things like this. But it seems as though there was a great deal of local concern. What's interesting is that these initiatives are taking place at the state level. Typically, mergers are reviewed by the federal government, the FTC, Department of Justice. Here, the states are saying they want to be able to take it in their own hands and to scrutinize or block a healthcare merger when they think it's going to harm the patients or when they think it could reduce service. It's a way for states to attempt to take some of the power back to review transactions that they think might not be good for the people in their states and their communities.
So how is the private equity industry responding to those concerns, especially about patient care and how services might be impacted?
The private equity industry seems to say that there is a problem with healthcare in the United States, period. It's not an issue of private equity-owned healthcare. There are problems with hospital operators that have nothing to do with private equity, and they feel that private equity is being sort of unfairly made to represent the problem as a whole. They also say that they simply disagree with the premise that private equity involvement reduces care. They point to the large amount of money that they've invested in the sector. Private equity firms invest tens of billions a year in the healthcare sector. The figure that I saw was something like 1 trillion in the last 18 years total. And they say that this investment benefits patients. And their argument is that more or less there needs to be an enormous amount of investment in the healthcare sector, and that by attempting to block private equity acquisitions, they're cutting off an important channel of investment.
Which states are taking this on right now?
Well, there's more than a dozen that have passed merger review laws. Indiana is the most recent, but there's a lot more legislation pending. In California, there's a bill that everyone's watching very closely, lobbying both before and against, that would require the state to take a look and review all private equity transactions in the healthcare space. In Minnesota, a bill was proposed that would simply ban private equity firms from making acquisitions in healthcare. There was a similar bill that's relatively strict, is going to be reintroduced in Oregon next year. So there's quite a lot of different ideas and different approaches that are taking place at the state level. And of course, this is taking place at the same time that on the federal level, there is a large investigation across the government into private equity's role in healthcare. And this, all the state, these state bills are taking place in parallel with that at the moment.
Are we seeing differences between how this is playing out in Democrat-led states versus Republican-led states?
You would have to say that predominantly it's members of the Democratic Party that have been advocating for these merger review bills. However, that's not entirely true. Just last month, the most recent of these bills passed in Indiana, which has large majorities in the state legislature and the Republican Party. So this is clearly an issue on which there is a significant degree of overlap between Republicans and Democrats. There's quite a few of these bills that have been passed on a bipartisan basis, and it's not simply a left or right issue.
That's Wall Street Journal pro-private equity reporter Chris Cumming. With President Biden and Donald Trump both calling for more trade restrictions on China, we want to know what questions you have about the direction in which trade policy is headed and how it might affect you, your business, or the broader economy. Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's wnpod@wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. Coming up, pension fund managers are shifting their money out of stocks. We'll talk about why and where they're putting hundreds of billions of dollars after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Pension funds are pulling hundreds of billions of dollars from stocks. After a blockbuster run, managers are cashing out. Some are shifting money into bonds, while state and local government funds are swapping stocks for alternative investments. So why the shift? And what could it mean for you? Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal banking reporter Charlie Grant. Welcome back, Charlie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's start with some of the reasons for this shift. There was a lot of money to be made in stocks. Why are pension funds pulling out now?
Part of it is that pension funds have had a great run in the stock market, like a lot of people. Stocks have had a great year this year. They've wobbled a little bit lately, but they had the best first quarter since 2019 and were not far from all-time highs in the major indexes. So it's a good moment to take money off the table if you've been riding those gains.
How much money exactly are they moving?
Pension funds across the U.S., the estimate from Goldman Sachs, which tracks this sort of thing, is they're estimated to sell $325 billion worth of stock this year, and using the proceeds to move into other asset classes, in part to do things like take advantage of higher interest rates.
Okay, that's a pretty big amount. What are some of the funds that are shifting now, and is there a difference in strategy between public versus corporate pension funds?
There is. Big companies like Johnson & Johnson and RTX have been moving out of stocks into fixed income, aka bonds. And one reason for that is corporate pension plans mostly stopped taking new members many years ago. And so what they do is they buy bonds that mature at a specific time with a specific rate of return, and they tag those to pension fund liabilities, which would the ordinary person would think of what the fund owes a beneficiary when they retire. And then we have public funds like the California Public Employees Retirement System and the New York State Common Retirement Fund. And these funds are lowering stock allocations and ramping up investment in alternative investments like private equity and private debt markets, partially for the same goals.
What does it mean that all of this money is being pulled out of stocks? Are we seeing that impact?
You know, the stock market universe is so big that $325 billion seems like a huge number. And it is. It's an important seller, but there are other major buyers in the market besides pension funds. For example, Goldman Sachs analysts expect that corporations will be net purchasers of their own stock, doing things like company buybacks and things like that. So there are other big buyers picking up the slack. But as we've seen, the market is starting to wobble a little bit. And part of that might be other investors having the same idea as pension funds, that maybe now it's a good time to take some chips off the table.
Let's get to what this could mean for our listeners. What is the risk assessment for retirees as we see these pension funds moving the money?
Well, it's a good thing for retirees, right? I mean, stocks are risky. They can go down. Sometimes they go down a lot, not very often, but when it does, that can stink if you're counting on a fund to pay out benefits that you've been promised and earned over many years. And so when you see funds rotating out into less risky assets from stocks, usually that's a sign of strength. Investors who follow this situation, they said that oftentimes when you want to take risk off the table, that's often in a moment of great stress and volatility in the markets where you can't really do so. So deciding to take risk off the table when stocks are still fully priced and you can get a fair price for your assets is a good thing and not something to be especially worried about.
That's Wall Street Journal banking reporter Charlie Grant. Netflix brought in a bunch of new subscribers in the first quarter, strengthening its position as the dominant global streamer. The streaming giant added 9.33 million subscribers, more than five times the number it added during the same period last year, thanks in part to its crackdown on password sharing. Netflix says it now has an audience of more than half a billion people. Subscriber growth through March was slower than the final quarter of last year, but remained robust, topping some Wall Street analysts' forecast. The company reported revenue of $9.37 billion, up almost 15% from a year earlier, and ahead of its own projections for the period. Net profit rose nearly 80%. And before we go, heads up, we updated this morning's episode to remove certain language about Big River Services and Amazon's practices under its Project Curiosity. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.